Welcome back to The New You, Life After Losing Someone to Suicide. This is our episode 4, so we thank you for joining us again. My name is Dawn.
And I am Tricia.
And today we're going to cover a couple topics, but we're going to start with the fog. So Tricia, I'll turn it over to you.
When we talk about the fog, by that we mean definitely it is the haze that we live in. We'd like to say initially after the loss, but like we discussed earlier today, talking, I think some days we still feel like we're in the fog. You know, you're going through the motions and you're going to work every day and you're doing the work, but you catch yourself. I know I catch myself be at the table and you'll be having full conversations with people and you're interacting and you're yes and no and you're doing it. But they're in one ear and out the other. You're retaining none of it. And then sometimes you see people looking at you and it's like, okay, maybe they're getting it that nothing's registering because they're looking at you like nothing's registering with her. Like I'm just talking and she's not getting it. Do you see that you catch yourself doing that, like your mind is somewhere else?
I do. I guess the best way that I can describe it is we kind of talked about the autopilot. I've had days that I've drove home and I know that I made it from point A to point B, but I don't remember the trip in between. And I think our minds are so busy, focused on other things that what is normal for us, we just continue to do it. It's back to that autopilot. And I do definitely agree with there's days when people look at you and I'm hoping that that's what they're thinking, because if not, it's hard to say. And there may be days, maybe I am ignoring them, who knows, but not usually the case.
I think we live like you've done things for so long, you can live off just basic muscle memory for a long time. Your brain doesn't even necessarily have to function, and you can still go about an entire day and not even realize you haven't had a complete, legible thought all day long.
And I think it's exhausting. I mean, when you talk about that muscle memory, I think the grief process is exhausting. And I know we'll touch on this a little bit later about time-wise, but I don't know. I mean, there's days where I'm getting to a point where, you know, I'm ready for bed at 8 o'clock at night, but I know I have a ton of things to do. And when you wake up, you're not necessarily refreshed, and it just goes back and adds to that exhaustion on a daily basis, which makes the fog some days even worse.
Definitely. And I catch, like, at work, I'll catch, like, the girls at work, well, I'll be working away in my own little bubble, and then you feel somebody staring at you, and it's like, all right, what did I miss, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'll look over, and they're all looking at me, and I'm like, okay, what? Did you hear us? Nope. I'm like, say it again. And so one of the gals says, do you even hear anything I say anymore? And I said, I swear, I'm not intentionally ignoring you. I, like, my brain, I used to be able to do 17 things at one time. And you could ask me which customer wants to pay with credit card and which customer wants to pay on the 15th. And I could tell you the name of every accounts payable customer for every shop that we dealt with. Now, some days I'm lucky to get you my name. I know some days I don't even know what my own name is, but if I'm working on something that takes some major concentration, that's as far as my bandwidth goes, because half of my brain in the back over here is thinking about her, or what are the other kids doing? Is everybody at home okay? Or, God, did I make sure someone took their meds today? Or, you know, what do I need to do? It's just a constant. Like, half of your brain is constantly on a different path. So it's almost like you're Siamese twins and you're fighting with that other half all day long just to keep on one track. It is exhausting. You're right. It is. And you get home some days and it's like you just whooped. There's no other word for it.
And for me, I find if I'm focusing on work, that's all I'm focusing on. And if I get stuck with something else, it's like, okay, I just need to get back to this. I can't multitask as well as I did before either. I still feel like I'm fairly okay with it, but I find myself being more overwhelmed when the tasks are longer and it takes more muscle memory or brain power to do that task.
Right. I think that's not only for us, like I'm a huge, I want everything to be perfect because I feel like that's a reflection of who I am. So for me, it's a very hard step to go from where I was to now. So it's hard to accept. But for everyone in your family around you that you're used to being like, oh, I make everyone's doctor's appointments. And I'll remind you that you have a dentist on the 3rd of July, you know, whenever. I can't remember, you know, if I brushed my teeth this morning. So you're probably screwed if you're expecting me to make your doctor's appointment. You might want to make that call yourself. And they'll call me, Mom, did you do this? Or my husband will call and say, did you do this? And generally, and right or wrong, and it's generally wrong on my part, I will get upset. I'm like, gosh, damn it, can't you guys just make something? Can you do something yourself for one day? Because that's the defense. Instead of admitting that I'm failing on one end because I feel like I'm failing, I will get agitated because I can't do it like I used to do it anymore.
I think that's, and part of that is being hard on yourself because of, you know what you were capable of before, and it's more challenging to get back to that now. Going back, piggybacking off your making appointments and stuff, I find myself making notes all the time. And then I'll put a sticky note somewhere, and I know I put it in a safe spot, but I forget where that safe spot is sometimes. So calendar has been my best friend, and I also have a son who is my walking calendar. So if you want to remember something, you tell him and he'll be sure that you're going to follow through with that. So
thank the Lord that I was blessed with a 24-year-old assistant at work that has the memory of a 7-year-old child that you said yes to on one Saturday last year, because I will forget stuff so fast. And she said, no, you did it this, and this on this day. And I'm like, oh, jeez. He remembers everything. So if I know I have to do something, when I get to work, I'll say, remind me at 11 o'clock, I have to call Paige for this appointment. So she reminds me, and I really would be lost if I didn't have her
at work. That is awesome. Let's go back. I know one of the things that we talked about was time and how we judge time now versus before our daughters passed away.
I think time is one of my, I feel like my biggest enemies right now. Like, it's the most infuriating concept for me. And it's something that evolves without your family, without you even realizing it. How we measure or judge time now is awful. Because now I can't say, oh, last January we did this. How it comes out. And it irritates me when other people do it, but then I catch myself doing it. Time is measured in two ways now. It's before she died or after she died. And it does not matter what you're talking about. That's how it comes out. And it's depressing. It's hurtful. It's aggravating. But you can't stop it.
Do you think some of that is just that you want to hear her name?
Maybe. And then maybe some of it is, we went to my grandmother's house yesterday, and my husband were talking, and I said, gosh, when was the last time we were over here, you know, with COVID and everything that's happened last year? And he said, oh, it hasn't been that long. And the first thing out of my mouth was, well, it was before her funeral. He said, no, it wasn't. I said, yes, it was, because I remember her saying, you should have called me. I would have went with you. But then it hit me. I'm like, why do you say stuff like that? But that's just where our time, like, I think for me, and maybe for any parent, my timeline stopped on February 24th, 2020. Like, I stopped moving forward on that day, and I'm stuck. The needle is stuck right there on that day. And until I can figure out how to get past that day, that's probably how I will measure that time. And I don't know if there's an answer, or if there's not an answer, or if it's just, you know, a time thing. If it just comes, the more healing comes. But I think I'm stuck, and that's why the time is measured there.
I think one of the things, too, we kind of talked about was, oh, just, you know, for me, July 24th was our date, and I don't know where that time went. I still have days where I don't believe it actually happened. I mean, obviously, I know it happened, but you still have that hope that they're going to walk through the door, and you still have hope that that phone's going to ring, or whatever the case may be. So I don't know that it's hit home 100% yet, but I know recently you hit that 1 year anniversary, and you know, you made the comment, well, where did that time go? I mean, that was a year. What happened in that year's time?
To be honest, if somebody asked me that, I would have to say I got lost. And did it feel like a year's passed? No. It feels like it was yesterday that I called her at 6 o'clock in the morning, and she said, I'll call you later, Mom. I love you. I got that last I love you. And so it feels like it was yesterday that it happened, but then it also feels like it's been forever since I touched her or felt her or, you know, heard her laugh. Time is such a wonky, out of sorts thing anymore, you know. It should be fairly simple, 24 hours in a day, 7 days in a week. It just doesn't work that way for us. Time, the sense of time is warped.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could be a blessing or a curse.
Both. Mm-hmm. I think, like, some mornings when you said you don't realize, like, you forget she's gone. I think for the longest time after she passed, every morning I felt like I was stuck in the movie Groundhog's Day. Like, mornings were the worst, and I would find myself not sleeping. I would stay up because if I slept at all, when I woke up in the morning, I would get that 30 or 45 seconds of all is right with the world. You know, like you wake up and like, God, that was the worst nightmare ever. And then it was like getting hit by a truck again. Like, nope, she's really gone. And I think those were when a lot of my breakdowns would come. Is like right at bedtime when I'm going to bed, or in the morning when I would wake up and realize she's still gone. And I would just sob and sob and sob. I think time, sometimes we think is our worst enemy, because we do forget. Like Sundays suck for me. Sunday was always her day that she would bring Walker and she would come over, and she would call me on Friday and say, this is what I want for Sunday dinner. And I would make it. Our back door has had a squeak in it for as long as we've lived here. And I kept saying, well, we'll fix that. We just never have. And when the door squeaks now, you can't, you know, she's not coming through there, but the knowledge of knowing that she's not coming through there never stops your heart from skipping that beat, praying that it's her coming through that door. And it's a strange thing. It doesn't matter how much time passes.
I would agree with that. We talked a little bit about awkward silence. And one of the things that I had kind of brought up in one of our conversations was the friendships that we once had and what they look like today. And we kind of tied that into that awkward silence because we had some of our friends come up and, you know, months later and just say, you know, I really wanted to come over, but I couldn't, I didn't know what to say. And one of the things that we kind of talked about was they don't have to say anything. Just knowing that that person is there and they are supporting you, I think is enough. But I think some of those friendships, I wouldn't say that they went away. I just think they changed in some sorts. How do you feel about that?
Like I have some friendships that I've had for 20 plus years, and they do change. It's not intentional on their part. I think it depends on the person, their comfort level in just strange, these circumstances are strange and people aren't prepared for handling them. But I kind of always joked before that I had the ability to walk into a room and just stop the show. But I really never knew what that felt like until after she passed, because you could walk in a room now and instantly, like, the silence is just deadening and the tension is palpable and you can feel it. Like, no one wants to make eye contact, and it is the most awkward. They don't know what to say, so they avoid it, or they make it. It's just, I think that's a lot of the reason people avoid first initially going back to work, because that elephant in the room, you know, they avoid her name and they avoid talking about, oh, she died, or the funeral, or how are you, and it just turns into one huge avoidance, and it's so awkward for some people. And, you know, you and I are both fairly outgoing, so we're never a person that's going to sit in that room for very long silently. I don't ever want to make someone else sit there uncomfortably for that long, so I would break that silence. If you weren't a person that was a real strong character or a strong personality, that elephant in the room scenario can be crushing for you. Like, my daughter is not someone that would be able to break that silence. And so seeing certain people or being in a room like that where everybody's avoiding it is very hard for her.
I think too, I've heard of some people saying, you know, like when they go back to work, they've told their coworkers or told one and then they pass it on, you know, don't say anything to that person. And I do think there's some validity in that, you know, just allowing them time to come back and, you know, maybe just saying, hey, I'm here if you need anything type thing, and let it go. And not everybody reacts in the same way. But I think it's crucial to be supportive of that person coming back to work. And, you know, if they want to talk, they want to talk. And if not, don't make them sit there in silence like you were talking about. I think it's just having that fine line.
Yeah. And I think some people are way better than that. I was blessed when I went back to work. I have a couple of close friends that work there, and one particular was very good at leading it. Like, his intention was, we're going to go about a day like it's a normal day, which means we're not going to avoid that she has three children, or we're not going to avoid names, and we're going to talk to her just like we did before. And if she's having a good day, we'll go with it. And if she's having a bad day, we'll go with that too. And so there was days where I was a blubbering mess for the first few hours, and they were fine with that. And they would either, you know, if I wanted time alone, I would just go to the office by myself and we would get through that. Or if I wanted to talk it out, somebody would talk me out of the dark spot. But I think it all depends on who you work with. And if you set the tone, like, it is okay to talk about her. My daughter was a very good big presence in the office, and she used to come in a lot and visit. So they all knew her, and her picture's everywhere in the office. So she's pretty hard to ignore in there. But a lot of people are, you know, some people are different. I have friends that I've known for years that they don't want to talk on the phone anymore. They'll text me, you know, hey, how you doing? Which is easier for them. But like one of my oldest best friends, her husband obviously died a few years ago, and she will be one that will write to the root of it. Like, hey, you're quiet. What's up? Spill it, you know, because she's been there and she understands. But she also knows initially right afterwards, sometimes what we needed was somebody just to sit. It wasn't necessarily about talking. It was just something to sit. I think one of my biggest issues now, and you and I have talked about it, is there's certain people that, how they deal with it is, we're going to act like she didn't exist. That doesn't work for me. It doesn't work in my world. She was my world, and she was a huge part of it, and she's going to be a huge part of it going forward. So to pretend like she didn't exist offends me and agitates me. So I would prefer you talk about her. Don't act like you have to avoid her or step around her, because she's real. She was real for me, she was real for a lot of people, and she's real for her son going forward, and we're going to keep talking about her forever.
Absolutely. And I think that's important that you have that conversation. I mean, I'm the same way. I want to talk about my daughter. I don't want to forget her, and I don't want that one day to define her life. I want everything else to define her and the person that she was and her character and her lovingness and her love for life and people and how she wanted to help people. I don't want to ever not talk about that. And if people are awkward about that, then just say, you know, do you want to talk about it? Do you not? I don't want to lose friendships over it, but I don't want people to not talk about it either.
Right. And I think that's one of the most important things to remember that I would want to say about anybody who's left by suicide or committed suicide, however you want to put it, is they are more than their final act. They are more than their last day. They are more than their last thoughts. That was the first thing that went through my head, is I don't ever want her to be the whisper, to be, oh, you know, she committed suicide. She was more than that. She helped people and she had her own business and she was a wonderful mom and sister and a great daughter. And she had a lot of friends and she was more than that one thing. So when you're talking about someone who has passed by suicide, I want you to really consider yourself and your loved ones and think about if one of them was gone or you did that to yourself, would you be more than that one act? Because both of our girls are so much more than that one day. That was one tiny snippet in the time that they were here with us that does not define who they are.
Right. How about resuming? I know we kind of talked about going back to work and things like that, but do you feel, and I know it's been about 13 months for you, do you feel like you've resumed life the way you had it before? I mean, obviously I know Morgan's not here, but are you kind of back to your new normal or?
That's funny. That seems to be the theme of my week this week. I don't know if there's ever such a thing as I'm getting back to my life. I had that very same conversation with my boss this week. He said, where do you see yourself next year? Do you see yourself being back to normal life? And I probably had that look, that autopilot fog, you know, like just fell off of the turnip truck look maybe. Like, I don't know if we're quite living on the same planet here, because going back to my normal life would mean going back 13 months and having 3 children alive and happy and me being able to help her through this, and that's never happening. So I don't know. And I think initially we set those expectations for ourselves, and a lot of people set those expectations for us because, you know, you'll get back there. You'll get back there. And in the back of your head, you say, someday I'll get back there. You're never getting back there. You're never getting back there because that's backwards. There's a different life ahead of you, and there's a better way to live than you are initially ahead of you. Will I ever get back to who I was when she was here? No. She was 1/3 of who I am. She was a huge part of who I am. She'll always be a huge part of who I am, but she's not here anymore. So I am forever going to be a different person going forward. And I would like to think that her leaving, it changed me in a lot of ways, not all bad, because it made me take a step back in life and look at, it's forcing me to look at the blessings instead of the things that were taken from me, because you could spend forever being bitter about being robbed of her instead of thinking about how blessed you were to have them. So will I ever get back to who I was? No, never. And I think for somebody who's not lived this or walked this path, that might be one of the hardest things for them to understand. I'm never going back to that person, but can I get to a place where I can learn to live with this pain or utilize it to make good come from it? Yes.
And that was, I think, one of our purposes too of this podcast was to help people navigate that. I agree. I don't think you'll ever get back to where we were. And I don't know that we were meant to. I think that there is more ahead of us. And this is one way that we are choosing to deal with this, to maybe educate people on how we feel, right, wrong, or indifferent. But if we can help someone else along the way, that's really our mission. And
yeah, I don't know that there's any, you know, we've read books and we've shared our thoughts back and forth of other people, and everybody handles it different. But one thing we were both in agreement on, and certain books or certain things we've read or certain things we've talked about, is we would never do it under the veil of dishonesty or shame. And by that I mean, never would I hide the way she left or disguise the fact that she was struggling with a mental illness or that it got the best of her or that I missed the depth of it or she hit the depth of it or that she didn't get the help she needed. I felt like if I didn't come out swinging with the truth and I didn't tell everybody what was real and what she was going through, that I would do her a huge disservice. You know, that I would minimize the battles that she fought by herself by covering this up with something else. And you and I both agreed on that, that the only way forward, and I remember my grandma always saying that the only way past is through it. And the only way for us to get through it is to just throw it out there and be real with people, because somewhere out there in the world is somebody that was floundering just like we were in those first weeks, or like we are at a year or 6 months, and they're trying to figure out where their path forward is. And they may not be the strong people with a big mouth like I have that want to talk about it, but they maybe want to listen to somebody else say the things that they feel inside. So I think that there is no wrong way for you to deal with that. However you get through your days is how you get through your days. Just for us, hiding what happened and not using it in a manner to help other people was never a question. I knew on day two, she wasn't going to die in vain, that we were going to go forward, and I had to. People were going to get sick of hearing from me is what I knew right away. They were going to get tired of me.
I think just validating those feelings. I mean, you and I have talked about this many a times as well. Having a sounding board and, you know, being able to finish each other's questions or sentences, and just knowing that what I'm feeling, even though it may be a little bit different, is validated. It's okay. It's not a stigma, or shouldn't be a stigma. It's just important that you talk, because holding this in is not healthy. And dealing with it and putting it out there on the table and calling it as it is important.
And if there's one person out there that's on the fence that struggles with their mental health and they feel like they can't do tomorrow, or they feel like the battle is all uphill and there's nobody that will listen, there is people that will listen. And if you need somebody to listen, we want you to know that we'll be those people. I don't ever want anybody to come to a day where they feel like our girls felt like that was their only answer and that they couldn't. And me and Morgan, we talked about everything, and I'm talking everything. We talked about crazy, off the wall, everything. And I knew that she had postpartum depression, and I knew about the meds, and I knew about the hormones. But I think there was, for her, there was still shame in the depth of the darkness she was feeling. Like, she had told me she was sad and she was struggling, but I just didn't know how bad, because people are afraid to talk about it. And if we can change that tone, we have to start changing that with little kids, so they're okay to talk to teachers or parents or grandparents or, you know, even strangers if they need to. It's okay. And in the world today, there's probably far more of us that are not okay than there is that are okay.
I would agree. Totally agree. I think the last topic that we want to talk about today is isolation, and whether it's how we feel isolated or how we isolate ourselves. One of the things we had brought up is, I guess I feel, especially during the pandemic, you know, we were so isolated already. And I kind of got to the point where I'm okay with that. I'm a homebody anyway by nature. I do enjoy, you know, having some time out, but those initial first times out and having that awkward silence and, you know, the people, how are you doing? Or you're in the grocery store and you're focused on getting groceries because that's all you can focus on right now. And you've got people stopping you, and I think for myself, that was how I isolated myself. I go home, do what I need to. I get up, I go to work, do what I need to, come home, do the same routine. And I had to do that, I think, for my mental health at the beginning. But I also feel like now I'm more isolated myself from some of my friends by doing that as well. How do you feel?
Definitely. I think initially you're in such internal chaos. Like, everything in your life and everything you've been taught and everything you know has never prepared you for this. So when it happens, it's not your initial instinct to reach out. You know, you're feeling like you failed them somehow, or you missed a sign, or I didn't see it, or how did I talk to her and I didn't go. So that's your first step in isolation, is you start to internalize this happened, and you start to internalize that, like, how could I have let this happen? And you don't get all that out. And I know my house was so full of people that first week when we were funeral planning. And I'm both thankful and just in a blur from it, because they did a lot for me, but I don't know that I ever had a real genuine conversation with more than maybe my mom and two of my friends in that whole week, because it was just so much. But the funeral was a daze. I remember hugging a million, you know. The funeral director said they stopped counting at 500 and something. There were so many people there, so the reception line was tremendously long. And it was shortly after that I just realized every time I went to the store or I went out in public, even if people didn't talk to you, you got the, here's a look. And it's like, you know what? I don't want the pity look, and I don't want the poor Trisha look, and I don't. And it blessed their hearts. It's because they don't know what else to say, because this stuff should not happen. But I also noticed I am by nature, my mom will tell you I was a quiet child, and I don't know if she was medicated or she's just not truthful, because I am not a quiet person. I love being the person in the middle of the room telling the jokes and laughing and having a good time. And I'm just that person. So for me to isolate myself was probably more harmful for me than anything. I got to where I avoided doing things with friends, and I got to where I still to this day, my phone will ring and I'll look at it and we'll debate in my head. Oh, do I answer it or don't I? Do I feel like having a normal conversation today, or what kind of questions are they going to ask me? So. And then Morgan passed 3 weeks before the pandemic hit. Thank goodness we got to have the family here and the big funeral. And we got to have all of that for people to deal with something, the grief and her passing. But then the pandemic hit shortly after that. So we weren't going to see grandparents, or because I went back to work and I was around people at work because we were considered essential. I wasn't going to see my mom and my niece at my sister's house that had a new baby. And being we were caring for Morgan's child certain days of the week, we also weren't going out in public because we didn't want to get sick and bring it to him. So I do think that compiled a lot of extra sadness or yuck on me, because I'm a people person and I do, bless his heart, I think it caused my husband some undue eschewings or grief, maybe, because Trisha pent up in the house can be kind of volatile. But I am a people person, and I think, so we're at 13 months, and I will honestly say twice, and this is most recently in the last 2 months, we've gone out to dinner and drinks and done things with friends, but that's it in the last 13 months, and that's crazy for me. Because I like to be around people, and that's what I need to survive. And it's just, so isolating yourself becomes easier the longer you do it. It becomes way easier. And that's scary for me, because I watch my son do it. And when you start doing that, it is a slippery slope, because you can slide down really fast.
I think it's just important, you know, for those listening to be able to reach out to those people, you know, even though they may not answer the phone, Trisha.
I know.
I think it's important to keep calling them. It's not that they're avoiding you, although they may be sometimes, but I think it's just processing. I there's moments that you get home and you can do nothing more than just decompress, and answering that phone is not going to help you at that moment. And you have to do what's healthy for you. That doesn't mean that your friendships aren't important. And hopefully, you know, you text them back or you call them back later or just say, hey, I can't talk right now. The biggest thing, just don't give up on them. And they need that extra support.
And I have said that to my husband and a couple of friends. I'm like, just don't give up on me. I know I'm not me. Just don't give up. What do? You look at the name on that phone and you're evaluating your head. How much energy is this conversation going to take? And do I have it? Some days you do and some days you don't. But there's phone calls you will always answer. My mom and my children, you know, I'll answer those phone calls. But the rest of them, it's crapshoot. You know, you may get through, you may not. Well, hopefully we get better at that. But it's easy to do, to fall into that hole. And then I see where maybe it was easy for them to isolate from us as well when they weren't feeling down. So I think we're going to stop there for today. And if I leave you with one message, it's to remember that they are not their last act. And if you know someone that you see as a friend and, you know, they've not lost someone to suicide, but you see that they're isolating and they're not answering and they're changing, just be the person they can talk to. But you know, you don't have to fill the voids, but just reach out, like Dawn said, check on them, let them know you're there, extend a hand.
Again, if there's any other topics that you'd like us to cover or have any questions that you'd like us to answer, please reach out, leave a message for us, and we thank you for your time and we hope that you'll come back and visit us for episode 5.
Have a great day. See you next time.
Bye-bye.